It's March 29th, 2012. This is the Hell Yeah Show. Hello and welcome to the Hell Yeah Show. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
We are bringing you best practices for fine living, advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. Emery.
No, we've not seen Hunger Games.
Yeah.
No salad bar either.
We stand alone in that regard, I think.
Yeah. We're the we're waiting for the Sunday buffet. It's on the trapezoid of mediocrity that I referred to earlier. Not like the pyramid of greatness.
I've heard it has its merits.
I've heard it's fantastic. I read a book that is kind of like it, though. Like several years ago, I read a book called, what's it called?
Hunger Games? It is based on a book called Hunger Games.
I'm aware of that.
I read
a book that was like originally like a novelization of a Japanese book about, what is it called? Oh, okay. I gotta go to the internet to find this. You're gonna hear my new keyboard.
Which brings us to one of your things actually for this week, in that you have a very, very loud keyboard now.
Yeah, sure do. You're welcome. About it?
While you were Googling.
I've been wanting to get a mechanical keyboard again, because I like how they feel. And the downside is that they're all kind of clacky and noisy. But the one that I got is the Razer Black Widow, which has like some additional macro keys that you can program. And of course, because it's a Razer product, it has a throbbing backlight that you can disable. I like throbbing things on my desk.
Do you want to go into a little more detail about mechanical keyboard itself? Like what's the difference in the feel for you?
Oh, well, there's like a, if you've ever used like what they call like a membrane keyboard, like on a laptop or something, or like the Bluetooth keyboard that you've got, they have like these little pads that press down, and that's how, you know, letters appear on the screen. But a mechanical keyboard has like a mechanical switch instead of a flat pad underneath that kind of registers key presses. And the reason that I like them is, one, there's two types of feedback as you're typing. So it's really easy to know that you've actually pressed a key without having to actually like see yourself do it, which is not necessarily a huge deal for a lot of people, but if you're like a touch typist, it can be a little disorienting at times. Mm-hmm. And then there's also like this this nice audio thing, and also like this slight give and click in the keyboard. You know, my favorite keyboard I ever had was the Apple Extended Keyboard 2, and it was an ADB keyboard that Apple sold through, I would imagine that it was very expensive. I remember it still being expensive when they stopped making it. Like, they were like $150. Huh. And they had like the old school ADB connectoid, and you plugged it into like, you know, the ADB port on your Mac, and it worked. but it was a really big keyboard, and there's a someone that makes a recreation of it, a company called Matthias in Canada. They sell it, and that one uses what are called Alps mechanical switches. So they have a slightly different design. They're like a buckle.
I feel like this rabbit hole goes really deep.
Yeah, you know, like that's a very good way to put it, because when you start getting into like the whole realm of keyboards and everything like that beyond I'd go to the Dell store and I spend $15 and they mail me a keyboard. Anything past that gets very personal very fast.
Right.
So, the main reason I like this one, though, is because the reason that some gamers like them, and which is why a company like Razer makes one that you can go buy at Best Buy, which is kind of nice, which is why I got it. It's not that I have any particular allegiance to it, but the ghosting. So on a lot of keyboards, you can't actually hold more than like three keys down at the same time.
Huh.
Do you know this?
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense because of the way they're built, but I didn't think about the implications of that on gaming.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, if you have like a modifier like Control, Shift, Tab, whatever.
Yeah.
You know? On a lot of keyboards, you can't do that. Like anything past Control Alt Delete, you know,
right.
Like they just doesn't register the simultaneous presses like that. Whereas
it's not necessarily number of presses; it's sort of like the regions of the keyboard they're in as well. I think, right?
Yeah, I think that varies by manufacturer, though.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, in general,
The basic idea is that most keyboards cut corners by not having an individual sensor for each key.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Precisely. So definitely feel like I can type faster and a little bit more confidently with the mechanical because I can, I don't know, it's a different feel and it's not something I would really, I mean, while I prefer it, I'm not one of those guys that is one of those guys about keyboards. Just I got enough things that I'm like really weird about, but the only drawback to them though is that they're not especially quiet. They do make some quiet versions. I know DOS Keyboard makes one that's a quiet, supposedly. It's like a, I think they call them cherry brown switches. And then there's the Razer people also make one called the Stealth that is supposed to be quieter and also has a matte finish, which I would actually prefer to the really high gloss piano black that this guy is. But there's really no incentive to... other than because you can't buy it in a store, you'd have to like order it and all this. And I'm just like, well, unless they make it with like a Mac layout or something that really makes it worth the wait, I don't really see any need for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But yeah, I like it a lot. The book I was thinking of was called Battle Royale.
Battle Royale. All right. Never heard of it.
By Koshin Takami.
Hmm.
And I read in English, of course, because I'm...
Not Japanese.
Correct. I'm not Japanese. I read like an English version of it. And it was pretty cool. It had a very similar theme, I think, to the Hunger Games, but without being the Hunger Games. It doesn't take place in the United States, for example. But
yeah, I know next to nothing about the Hunger Games. So
all I know is like there's like some post-apocalyptic future. This is going to really anger someone that likes it.
Yeah, sure.
And then there ends up being like colony nation states in the United States. One of them gets... a little too big for its britches, and so the central government like smacks them down, and then there's some sort of like brouhaha, and then they come up with this thing called the Hunger Games, like a competition where they send out these kids to like fight to the death, basically, or something. I don't know.
Sounds
and then whoever
lovely.
Wins gets like a free pony.
Great. Yeah, that sounds sounds pleasant. Yeah.
My other big excitement this week was that Sirius turned on my demo.
Right. We were talking about this last week, and yeah.
I'm not hating it.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
If I was a commuter,
yeah,
by car, like if, okay, let me back up a little bit. If I still lived in Washington D.C. and I had that kind of commute and that kind of travel, I would absolutely, without hesitation, pay for that service.
Yeah, yeah.
For the what are usually 5 to 10 minute jaunts. That I currently have in a motor vehicle.
Just enough to pop on some Met Opera radio, listen to a little archive show and for a few minutes. And then
sounds great.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy having all of the NPRs that I can care to eat.
Right.
I also like the Supreme Court coverage that's going on right now.
Oh, healthcare. I'm not aware of that. I mean, I'm aware of the Supreme Court stuff, but I didn't know that it was being covered extensively on Sirius.
There's like a SCOTUS channel.
Really?
Huh. You go into like the news numbers, and then you go into like the NPR territory and like the low double digits on that,
yeah.
And then eventually you'll hit one that's like, you know, SCOTUS.
Huh. Wow.
But yeah, it's kind of cool. I didn't write down the number or anything.
Yeah.
What else do I like about it?
Met Opera Radio.
I don't know. What do I know about opera? I see
what
you like.
That's the thing. I don't know anything about opera, but I still, you know. Turn on Met Opera radio once in a while.
Liz was pointing out that a lot of things about it seem peculiar, strange. In that there's like this, you know, they'll be like a rock station.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, great. It's playing My Name is Jonas. Like, I love that song. So she's like rocking out. And then the next song is like super speed metal something or other. And she's like... You know, how do you follow My Name is Jonas with that? And then sometimes, you know, like there's an All Grateful Dead channel and an All Pearl channel.
Yeah, the single artist channels are not great.
The Elvis one's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually a lot of the single artist channels are like sponsored or are, you know, that like they're a,
oh, I'm sure
they get some kickback on that. Yeah,
I'd like to have like, you know, the Hell Yeah channel.
Yeah, yeah, we could do it. You know, actually for a short amount of time, I think like a year or two, there was a show on one of the Sirius XM channels that would feature podcasts. It was like an hour or two of podcasts every day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, you know, this was back when podcasting was like this new novel thing. And so it was just like this random selection of some notable podcasts out there for about an hour.
My, since my special lady was out of town for several days at a conference, I picked up some games.
Oh, really?
And yeah, so I went to, well, there was a Dairy Queen. So I got
there was a Dairy Queen, and games involved. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Dairy Queen's awesome, and it shares. It's in like a little shopping plaza, and it's like in this cube with a GameStop.
Dairy Queen and a GameStop together. That's
yeah. Well, they're not, you know, you can't like, you know, walk directly from one into the other. You got to like, you know, go around. But they're in the same structure.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, first of all, I went to the Dairy Queen and I got myself a banana split blizzard, which is fantastic.
Really?
Highly recommend it. Yeah.
This is the wife's out of town routine, right here. A banana split blizzard followed by a video game purchase binge.
Banana split blizzard.
Yeah.
Yes. And I was, you know, I had a dirty day, so I hadn't shaved and I haven't showered. You know,
so you walk into Dairy Queen. Like, this, you know.
I got like, you know, my scalp is like flaking all over the place. Yep. It looks craving like the blizzard I'm eating is accompanied by this fog of war that's coming off my head.
And then you stumble next door into the GameStop.
Yeah, I'm also drunk.
Okay,
so I shouldn't say that, but I go into the GameStop. And I'm browsing, like, you know, the used rack of PS3 games because I'm still on my, you know, I'm done.
You will not pay, Sony. Not allow Sony to get a kickback from any of your purchases.
If I can possibly avoid it.
Yeah.
So I don't do any, what's the, when you buy something online?
Purchasing? I don't
know. The DLC for a game.
Oh,
like
you don't do any DLC.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Don't do any DLC if it's a Sony, if it's on the PS3. I have before, but I stopped with the GeoHot thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, because that was when they took a turn for the worse again. But which is a real shame because I love the console. The PS3 is a fantastic piece of hardware.
Hmm.
I just hate the people that run it. But so I'm in the GameStop and I picked up one of the Splinter Cell games that I haven't played yet.
Conviction, I'm guessing, maybe?
Double Agent.
Double
Agent.
What? Oh, Double Vision?
Double Agent.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. And I also got, what else? Oh, the Ghostbusters game for the PS3.
Oh, yeah. I've not played that.
Do you like the movie The Ghostbusters?
Who doesn't like the movie The Ghostbusters?
You'd be surprised. I'm sure there's people out there.
No.
They're dead to me.
There are two types of people in this world. There are people who have not seen that movie, and there are people who love that movie.
That's true.
Yeah.
Or... much like Bob in the movie What About Bob would say, there are two kinds of people in this world, those who like Neil Diamond and those who don't.
I don't remember that line.
Yeah, he's talking about his wife leaving him.
Oh.
It's because she didn't like Neil Diamond. Not because he's, you know, an agoraphobic...
Yes.
...who has a pet goldfish that he carries with him everywhere.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, but so while I'm in the GameStop, I picked up Ghostbusters, I picked up Splinter Cell, and then I went back later to get Skyrim. But while I was in the GameStop,
this is the ultimate like Home Alone day.
Oh yeah, this is horrible.
Yeah,
and Skyrim's pretty cool. Like I can see why people like it.
But oh, it's great.
It's one of those games I've been really waiting to see come on the used market, you know, so that I can pick it up.
Yeah,
but
I've heard so that the PS3 version actually, when it came out, had some major issues. But by this point, I think they've actually cleaned a lot of that stuff up. There were some big issues with save games, really messing things up.
You know, you told me I should play it on the PC, and then I also know that Mass Effect 3 is on the PS3, and I'm probably going to get that for the PS3 too. And here's why. I hate rebooting to play a game.
Yeah.
It's stupid. I mean, I do it, but, you know, it requires a lot of commitment. I can't, like, just do it temporarily because I got to stop everything that I'm doing, and I got to reboot into Windows, and then I got to play my game for a while, and then the moment that I need to do anything real, I have to, like, bounce it back. Like, it's such a pain in the neck. And so wherever I can, I'm getting consulted.
I think, you know, just next Home Alone Day, just make it a PC buying day. Just get another one of those, you know.
From your lips, God's ears.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, there was a the Skyrim intro takes way too long, though. That whole thing where you're sitting in a cart and you're gonna like wait until you get
down. It, and have you played Oblivion, the previous game?
No, I played Morrowind for like an hour.
Okay, you know, so the Oblivion intro is amazing. It's so fantastic. I mean, it starts with you're in charge, you're in control of your character almost immediately, and it starts kind of you know, in the sewers. It's not a, you know, really grand start, but it kind of catches your interest. But then the real fantastic part of it is that leads into this just great intro sequence with voiceover by Patrick Stewart.
Because he's the
king. He plays the sort of elderly king that's
number one. Engage.
Yeah, yeah. So you get this great voiceover from him. You get this really swelling, awesome music in the background. It just feels like this super epic start to that game. Skyrim is a bit. There's some epic stuff that happens, but that stuff does drag a bit. Yeah.
The best part about this GameStop location, though, is that since it is adjacent to the Dairy Queen, a couple times a day, apparently, an elderly person will walk into the GameStop thinking that it's the Dairy Queen. And it takes them, apparently, there's usually like a very long measured delay while they figure out what the hell they're even looking at. And sometimes, apparently, they get angry because they don't know what they're looking at. They're right. Like, you know, there are some people who understand, you know, like the video store. They've been to like a Blockbuster. But if you're an elderly person and you walk into like a place and there's a giant cardboard cutout, it's like, you know, to hell and back, and then, you know, Killzone 3 and skateboards, you know, like,
yeah.
It's very, very traumatic for a lot of people. And sometimes they get very angry that they are not standing in a Dairy Queen at that particular moment.
Well, I think most people get angry about that, but
yeah. Hey, if you're going to get mad about anything, get mad about that. Get mad.
All right.
Yeah.
Well,
that's my exciting week, and it's going to be more of the same on Saturday because there's another conference going on.
Oh boy.
Local.
Oh, you can pick up another three games.
I'm not even going to put on pants.
Wow. You're going to go to the GameStop and the Dairy Queen without pants this time. That's a brave step.
Friday afternoon at around 4:30. From that point on, I think I can go pants free until Monday morning.
All right, that'll be great. That's something to look forward to. Yeah,
FaceTime me. We'll see what's going on down there.
Yeah, I think I'll hold back on that. But thanks for the offer.
For the best.
Anyway, you had an exciting week. I had also an exciting week in different ways.
Did you get your dioramas done?
I did. I got all that stuff done just in time to. I got all the productive stuff out of the way, so that I could walk into an Apple store on Friday and turn my laptop over to them. Surrender my laptop to Apple. So I've been talking about this black screen issue that has been going on for almost a year now. It's been getting worse. If you force your laptop to use the integrated graphics card instead of the discrete one, you can actually avoid it because it's a defect in the NVIDIA discrete graphics card in my laptop. So I've been avoiding it for a while, but the problem was actually recently I had to, you know, connect my computer to a projector, and you can't connect your computer to a projector using the integrated graphics card on a MacBook Pro. So it's like, okay, you can't. Yeah, if you're forcing it to use the integrated graphics card, at least using GFX card status, the app I was using, it will not connect to an external projector. So
that's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if I fooled around with it a bit more, it's, you know, it's possible I could figure out some way to do it. But all I know is I looked really stupid trying to connect my computer to a projector to give a presentation. So that was enough for me to say, you know what? You know what? It's finally time to take this computer in and get this fixed. So
So
I took it into an Apple store.
I should really do that.
You hate when what?
I'm just glad to hear that you finally did it.
Yeah, no, it's good. It worked out well.
I told you they're going to take good care of you.
Yeah, yeah. So I walked into an Apple store. I made an appointment with Genius Bar beforehand. They basically asked me to demonstrate it, and I was able to fairly quickly demonstrate it. Just had to mess around with some, you know, graphically intensive animations I just switched between spaces constantly, basically. until the screen went black.
Whisk.
Yeah. So then the screen went black, and they're okay, this looks like it. But they still had to run a video test. So they took it in the back room, and they're like, this is going to take a while, so we'll give you a call and let you know what happens, because it needs to fail the test in order for them to cover it. And because otherwise, it could be, you know, maybe I poked a hole in my graphics card or whatever.
yeah, that happens.
Yeah. So I, you know, get back in the car, I'm heading home. I get a call before I'm even home from someone at the Apple store saying, we ran the test, your computer failed the test, so we're going to cover it in full. We've already ordered the part. We ordered the part as soon as you gave the computer to us. So we've already ordered the part. The part will be here on Monday or Tuesday. And then we'll repair it. I'm like, well, you know, okay, so you can get the part in Monday, Tuesday, then, you know, how many days, until it's repaired? And she's like, we're going to repair it immediately. She's like, as soon as the part gets in, of course, you know, it's like,
oh
yeah, we're going to repair it, you know, as soon as possible. You know,
lickety so split. Like,
yeah. She said, you know, it's basically just as soon as the part gets in. I'm like, okay, cool. So the part, I think, got in Tuesday, cause I got a call Wednesday morning, saying that it's repaired and ready to be picked up. And I picked it up and everything is wonderful. It is completely working again. No black screens at all. So, I've played a few games on it even, and, those work just fine. So that is fantastic. But of course that left me without a laptop for 5 days.
Boo.
Yeah. So fortunately, there are 5 spring break days in which I played like multiple rounds of golf and had all sorts of other stuff going on. So it's not like I'm depending heavily on my laptop for either productivity or entertainment.
I got a question for you. When you're playing golf.
Yes.
What's the trick to getting it to go into the clown's mouth? That hole always gets me. Like, I can never, like, the hand that goes across and blocks. Uh-huh. And then there's like a kid that's like yelling at me to hurry up, and I'm like, play through.
I got news for you.
Yeah?
You're playing the wrong kind of golf.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
I like frolf.
Oh,
frisbee,
yeah.
Golf.
Yeah, no, that's solid. Frisbee golf, or disc golf, as they say in the pro leagues.
They call it dolf.
No, they call it disc golf.
All right. Okay. So you're golfing. You're having
anyway,
fun.
So I'm golfing. I'm doing other things. But
have
still,
you ever seen a celebrity out there
on a golf course?
Yeah.
I may or may not have seen Mark Hamill.
Are you serious? When was this?
Tuesday.
Recently?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's not. I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, he was addressed as Mr. Hamill. He looked like Mark Hamill from the back, but I did not see his face. So he got out of a Bentley.
Oh, it was totally Mark Hamill. How did you not like rush him and get his autograph?
I he was walking the other direction.
Mr. Hamill, just a moment of your time. I'm on my way to the Hodgson station to get some power converters. Can you please sign my my visor?
Anyway, but yeah, so I'm doing that stuff, but it's still, you know, even with all this other stuff going on, I've still got to answer some email here and there. So I picked up,
not like an AMG or something.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of had, was it hit? Was he driving?
He was, he was driving. I don't know if this was Mark Hamill. All I know is he was addressed as Mr. Hamill and
he got out of a Bentley.
He got out of a Bentley and he looked
like Mark Hamill.
Back, so,
and he used the force.
And yeah, and then he force pushed a guy. So
it's clearly Mark Hamill.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Is there an Ewok?
There was no Ewok in the car. No. anyway. But yeah. Okay. So the actual story here. I ended up buying a Bluetooth keyboard, thinking, yeah, okay, you know, with this and with an iPad, I can survive for 5 days. I'll be fine. I can still answer email. You know, I can do whatever I need to do with keyboard and iPad.
Is that hand really robotic, do you think? Or is it like, was that like a prop?
I don't know if it was actually Mark Hamill.
All right.
I don't know. We'll see. I've had someone on the case to make inquiries, so I will report back if
you didn't send Boba Fett, did you?
If I know anymore. No, I know better than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Making anyway. Sure. If you can get him in carbonite though, I will pay top dollar.
All right.
80 million credits.
I think he's pretty wary of that though. I think he's I think he's looking out for the carbonite.
Yeah. DC is like Lando Calrissian walking around. He might be a little skittish.
Yep.
Okay, sorry.
Long story short, I cannot...
Bluetooth keyboard.
I cannot survive with an iPad and a Bluetooth keyboard.
Why?
It's just... The day after I got my laptop back, I felt so productive. I just wanted to do everything. I wanted to finish all of my work for the next half a year in that day. Because I'm just like, I can type and I can have multiple applications open at once. And I can use Google Docs. And I can, you know, copy and paste things easily.
You can use Google Docs
and
I can... Bad.
I tried very hard.
Really?
Yeah, there is still some serious issues there.
Huh.
Like, especially Google Spreadsheets. It's all in this kind of...
I don't use
like
that.
Cell by cell format. It's just, you know, and the sharing functionality is harder on the mobile stuff. I actually had to switch to the normal interface to share the document I was working on.
That's Google being bad though.
Yeah, I mean the issue is that the issue at the root of this is that the iPad, for good reason, doesn't support WYSIWYG text editing in an HTML page. There is a, you know, some HTML element that does, you know, nice graphical HTML-based text editing, and the iPad does not support that. So you basically have to have a plain text box, and you have to do everything within that. So that's why it's difficult, because you got Google Docs, you got all these different styles, you got links in there, you got, you know, pictures, whatever. That stuff is just not going to work on an iPad unless you get really, really tricky about it. So,
did you know that Pages is like the number one selling app on the App Store?
Wow. I mean, what are people doing in Pages without a keyboard? I mean, with a Bluetooth keyboard, Pages is great on an iPad. But without a Bluetooth keyboard, I can't imagine.
Still, I mean, I don't do a lot of like document authoring on the iPad, but I use Pages a lot when like I'm on my desktop or something, and if I have the document saved and I want to look at it or consult it or something, then I open it in Pages on the iPad.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean that is.
But yeah, I don't do a lot of my work on an iPad. I mean, I'm curious though, because I've tried, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to hear more about this, because the Google Docs thing, I thought they had sorted that out.
For text editing, it's okay. It's getting there, but you know, as I said, there's sort of that fundamental barrier where the iPad does not support a crucial HTML5 element that is necessary for for that kind of rich online WYSIWYG text editing. So
I wonder if it's like, well, maybe it's like just a browser thing, because I use iCab.
I'm
going to get my iPad. Hold on.
I mean, the reason it, you know, and you'll find that you can do some text editing, but, you know, you can't do something like insert an image or, insert a link or change styles and that sort of stuff. So, and the reason for that is just the iPad itself, you know, if they're, except in Mail, I guess now, there's no, you know, bold command. I don't know how they're doing that in Mail. But you know, it doesn't have the same rich text editing features as, you know, a laptop environment.
All right.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it'll come eventually. But yeah, there's still some issues there. And then you know, the other issue is just it just takes. It's not snappy. It's just not. It you know, you can't use Alt Tab or you know Apple Tab to switch between apps.
No, but you can like just throw your hand across the screen and switch apps.
Yeah, yeah. Still, there's, you know, there's a little delay, and it's not big, right? It's not, you know, you're not waiting for it to load, but there's a little delay, and it's, you know, and the delay to select text, you know, I mean, try formatting a large, try editing a large document, you know, try moving around a bunch of text, reorganizing paragraphs, you know, re-editing sentences. That stuff takes forever.
Man, is the iPad 3 like really that much faster than the 2?
No, I mean, it doesn't take forever because...
Wait, which iPad are you using?
I'm using the original.
Oh, yeah, that thing's a turd. No, I'm dead serious. I mean, I understand your frustration now.
But okay, the text editing stuff doesn't take forever because the device is unresponsive. It takes forever because the interactions you need to do to select text and everything just take more time than using a mouse. I mean, selecting a sentence on an iPad takes more time than selecting a sentence using a mouse.
How so?
Try it. I just like...
Yeah, you just double tap the sentence and it selects the entire thing.
Does it really?
Yeah, I just did it.
All right, maybe I need to... maybe I just need to get better at it. But, it just felt extremely frustrating. You know,
well, I guess, you know, if I was kind of an idiot, I think I would probably be really frustrated, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm looking. I mean, I don't know. I see. I'm editing our show notes right now. I don't know.
So I don't see your edits at all.
Well, I'm not in edit mode. I'm just like browsing around.
Okay. Yeah. But try and insert a link.
Okay, so.
To a news story, and then grab some interesting bits from that story and put them next to the link. That just like get the crucial information from that story and put it in there with the link.
Well, now you're going all sorts of crazy on me.
But that is the sort of thing that I need to do all the time. You know, let me grab these other three documents and synthesize things from these documents into this summary.
I agree.
That type of thing is so hard on an iPad.
I don't think it's in that particular example, though. I mean, no matter how I say this, I'm going to sound like a total apologist, but it's not that the iPad can't do it. It's that Google Docs doesn't do it in the mobile interface.
No, do it in Pages and Safari. Find three news articles on the Supreme Court case. You know, pick out the relevant bits, synthesize them into a bulleted list of information about that and links to the articles. Right? Like, it's not that you can't do that stuff. It's that that stuff is harder and takes longer. Huh. Because you can't have those three documents open at the same time. Copying and pasting the links is going to take at least twice as long. It's not like, you know, the iPad's not designed for that type of process. So it's fine. Like, you know, and I'm fine because I don't want to use the iPad for that type of process. And it shouldn't be designed for that type of process because then it would be really crappy for a lot of other things.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
That it does really well right now.
Yeah, I mean, like having multiple documents, like, I mean, here's the trick. At least on the iPad 3. Switching from application to application is trivial
because it's
fluid.
There's no loading time and you can use gestures.
You do the gesture to like move from side to side and it's completely fluid.
Yeah.
And like as an application becomes visible, it's active.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's definitely an improvement.
Yeah. I mean, still, you know, I guess it, you know, for me, switching between, to, you know, switching between a viewing mode and an editing mode, or, you know, switching between an editing application and a viewing application is so much more frustrating than having everything
I can see
on the same view. And beyond that, just, you know, there's just little things everywhere that just are slightly slower. And it's not, you know, it's not like it's dramatically slower, but it's like, you know, tapping and holding takes more time than right-clicking.
Really?
Yes. Tapping and holding takes like a second. Right clicking takes like 100 milliseconds.
Okay.
You know, and that is a difference. That if you're right clicking, you know, constantly, that's going to be a big difference. So,
yeah, I mean, this is one of the reasons why Steve Jobs did not ever have like a touchscreen Mac.
Right.
Like the general computing environment does not lend itself well to that.
Yeah.
Like it's definitely not something that can be executed easily.
Right.
But I mean, like on the iPhone and the iPad OS, like it seems like they've done a pretty good job with it, but you're right. Like it is made for different things.
Yeah. And it's so good at those things. I mean, my iPad is indispensable at this point, but for those things, you know.
Yeah. It's definitely a great tool for viewing and light editing and review.
Yep. Yep. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Huh. And then I tried out just a brief thing here. I tried out on live desktop.
How'd you like it?
I thought, what better time than when I don't have a laptop to try
that
out?
Yeah, yeah.
It's great. It's super. It's so well thought out. It works really well. It's fast. It's responsive. I couldn't figure out how to upgrade to a pro account. I wanted to give them money, and I spent about. I spent like 15 minutes poking around all their websites and help documents and whatever. I wanted to give them my whatever amount of money they wanted to charge to let me browse the web through that thing. And they would not, I could not find a way to make them take my money.
Wow.
So, yeah, I don't, maybe it's in settings.
Isn't there like a,
I didn't check I think in there's settings. A new.
Well, I think it's like an in-app purchase.
It's okay, so maybe
I
it's like
how they'd hand.
I don't know. I could not find it. So, or any reference or documentation of it anywhere. So, and like online,
well, maybe
has
maybe
my
they
billing
can't charge for it now because they've got that licensing issue.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean,
is
have
isn't
my
there like a competing service that launched now?
It should be pretty simple. I don't know. I've only that's the only one I used was on live. But
there was a story this week. I thought I had it. In our bookmarks.
Anyway, it was cool though. It was. I could definitely see it working very well for a need Word, Excel, PowerPoint in a pinch type of thing, or you know, web browser that runs Flash in a pinch. So,
well, okay, nobody needs that though.
Well, no, but don't you like the idea of having a web browser that runs Flash in a virtual machine that you can just trash.
If you're going to have it at all, having it in a virtual machine that you're not on the hook for is definitely the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. And then, this is another thing that is, another discussion that could easily go long. So I'll try and make this short.
Man, don't tell me.
Yeah. There's this article I found about switching off Lion, about sort of undoing all the changes that Apple instated in Lion.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of this stuff's terrible. This guy complains about how now there's an icon in the upper right of every window that makes it go full screen and how annoying that is, that icon is there and all that stuff. And so that stuff is ridiculous. But there's some really cool tips here, mostly preferences that you can write in using terminal commands. That do some nice things like disable document resuming for some applications, and this was great, disabling the animations in Mail, so that when you open a new message or hit reply or something like that.
Why do people get so angry about that?
Because again, this comes back to there's a huge difference between a 800 millisecond delay and a 10 millisecond delay. There's a huge difference between instantaneous and there it is. Huge difference. One feels responsive, the other feels laggy. And laggy is annoying and inconducive to doing a lot of things in rapid sequence.
Huh.
If I have to wait for every mail to, I mean, Mail is not the best example. My favorite example is Preview. The new Preview, if you scroll down, if you hit the space bar to scroll to the next page, it animates to the next page, which takes like half a second or a second. But if you want to scroll through 10 pages and you press the space bar 10 times, you then get to wait there for like 5 seconds while it scrolls through the 10 pages. So it's not so much that the single action is a problem. It's the compounding of multiple actions that you would like to do very quickly in sequence. Compound action is hampered if every individual piece of that action introduces its own potentially needless lag time.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, so I did some of this stuff. I recommend you at least look at this and see if some of these things will help you get rid of some of the minor annoyances of Lion.
Well, is there anything like that? See, on a Windows machine, this is my routine on a Windows machine. When I get like handed a new Windows 7 install, the first thing I do is I go out and I find this dude's website where he has a registry key that you can download that just remaps your caps lock key and turns it into a control key.
Yes.
That's the first thing I do, and then I reboot.
That's great. Yep.
And then there's like, really, after that, I mean, there's not a whole lot of customization. Like, people say that, like, you know, Windows machines are super customizable and blah, 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 and I don't really find that to be the case. Like, I go into, like, the settings, and I make the colors somewhat darker, and then that's pretty much it.
Yep. Yep.
Like, that's pretty much all I do. But, like, disabling the animations and stuff, like, on the start menu or in the case of OS X, like in the applications, I don't know. Like, they don't bug me.
Yeah.
But I can see how they could.
Yeah. Yep. No, I mean, it's kind of a personal preference thing. And you know, that's what I was saying. Like, basically look through this and see if there's things that where you go, oh, hey, that, you know, that does kind of annoy me when that happens. And you know, it gives you the tools to, customize that stuff as you want it. So, and then the final thing is Kobook, which we talked about many shows ago, this sort of social network-conscious address book that turns out, I mean, you know, the idea of a social address book sounds very buzzwordy, but really this thing is just a really, really good address book.
Well, I made the comment, my first impression of it was that it turns social networks into protocols.
Right.
And I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't have to give a crap about Facebook or maintain anything on LinkedIn. Like, if I have accounts, it can sort all that out for me.
Yep. And it's really intelligent about it. It's really fast.
It's really fast, isn't
it? It's super fast. Again, you know, that having that, you know, the fact that I can I press Control Shift Space, it's there. I type three letters of someone's name and I have their contact card. And I can do that repeatedly at any time I want and know that it's going to be there in a second, or less than a second, actually, if I'm fast.
Right on.
So, anyway, Kobook is awesome. Check it out.
Yeah, I really like it. I can't wait till it's done. I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be inexpensive, but I'm pretty sure that they're going to charge for it, right?
I will pay whatever they ask. So, I'm sold.
maybe we should get them on the show.
Maybe we should, yeah.
Like, that'd be a fun person to talk to. Like,
that, yeah.
Who's redoing address books? You know, like, that's...
I know. And it's so well thought out. It's like they thought about all the things you need to do with an address book, and they made them as easy and as nice and as quick as possible.
I think it's great.
It's great. It's fantastic. I just wish it... I wish it would sync automatically with Google Contacts. It syncs with iCloud, which is great.
Yeah, Google Contacts sucks, though.
But I need them.
They stomp all over your contacts.
I know. It's you know, but I currently, my workflow is occasionally uploading an archive of my address book to Gmail and hoping that everything sorts itself out. So,
yeah,
having a better way to sync that would be nice. But anyway, all right. So speaking of awesome Mac apps that you should check out. Let's get to the actual content of today's show.
And, what's that?
I don't know. Do we have actual content?
I don't know. Hold on. I'm going to find the show notes.
I was going to recommend something that I'm guessing you recommend, DNS Crypt.
You know, it's funny. I don't have like strong feelings about this, but it's interesting. So and this is not just for the Mac. I mean, it's for Windows and for Linux machines and really anybody that uses DNS. The people at OpenDNS, they run a really cool service for businesses, individuals, and homes and households. Essentially, what they do is DNS. which is kind of like the lifeblood of how you interact with things online. And I think a lot of people, even that aren't like super nerdy, probably get that. Like they know that there's a DNS server, mm-hmm. and they know that like they type in show.hellyad.com and then something happens behind the scenes to find out what number that actually is, and then it looks it up and then it goes there.
Right.
So one of the neat things about OpenDNS is that they let you, and one of the cool things that I like to do with it, if you're using them and you have like an account set up with them, you can do some like really interesting reporting on what gets looked up. And you can even do things for kind of like on the cheap. If you have kids in the house, for example, and you don't want them to like go to potentially risque sites, they have like various groups of like filters that would let the responses for those domains put someone into a penalty box of sorts without having to rely on like software that you're maintaining on individual devices in the house. So that's really cool because you could just have the DNS service get sent to OpenDNS, and then OpenDNS can handle all that. The thing about DNS crypt, though, is that there's some concern about the quote unquote last mile, which is like what your ISP is doing in terms of what they're mining about you. Mm-hmm. And I talked about this a little bit with Mediacom, where not only were they eavesdropping on my DNS traffic, but they were also like outright snooping on my browsing. And anytime I got like a 404 page, they were hijacking that page and then redirecting me.
Which is super annoying.
It's not only super annoying, but if you ask me, my interpretation of it is that it's illegal. I mean, I'm not an attorney, obviously, and I, you know, as far as I'm concerned, what they're doing is criminal, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
To me, like I certainly don't recall them telling me that as a condition of my service that they were going to monitor everything that I did, and that if there was an opportunity for them to sell me something, that I was okay with that.
Right.
Yeah. Like that's utter nonsense. Now, the other issue, though, is that a lot of times this last mile service can be not super well rigorously maintained. And there are problems with the DNS service because of that. So like it's only as trustworthy as the source that you're getting the information from. So one of the neat things about DNS crypt is that you can encrypt your DNS traffic to OpenDNS so that your internet provider or hostile government or employer or any number of other things is not able to sit on the wire and eavesdrop what you're doing. So, I mean, people have pointed out that a lot of times you don't have to have necessarily access to you don't have to be necessarily between a person and the rest of the internet in order to see or get an idea of what it is they're doing. So having access to that DNS data is actually pretty interesting, especially for people that do the stuff that I do on the information security and assurance side, where you have there's a lot of forensics value on DNS lookups. So command and control channels for malware that talks to central servers that, mm-hmm. you know, give marching orders to botnets and things like that. Like they do a lot of these fast flux DNS changes where they have these they get like these really weird random strings of characters registered in DNS somewhere and then make those requests for these domains that then they can easily drop, and as they get disabled, move from domain to domain and address to address and host to host. So there are people who are manipulating the DNS system on that end. And then you also have people who are doing like cache poisoning, where they find like, just for the sake of argument, like, you know, Big Bob's Telecom, they want to make it so that all of the people who have cable modems from Big Bob's Telecom, every time they type in www.google.com, they're actually being redirected somewhere else. And that's something that these cache poisoning attacks can do. The OpenDNS people have a pretty good track record on being immune to things like that. So they're kind of a more trustworthy source than other DNS services. But there's a lot of value in that. So I think it's going to come up more and more often that like people are figuring out that their ISPs are harvesting and mining that DNS data. I mean, why do you think Google's like giving away DNS service for free?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of valuable information there. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the Google, if you want to use Google's DNS, it's 8.8.8.8. And then like there's the old level three Anycast DNS service on 4.2.2.1. And then, I don't know, there's a lot of like DNS services out there. I like OpenDNS because they let me do cool things like report on all the lookups that I'm doing. For example, since I have an IPv6 allocation for my house that gets tunneled, I like seeing how many of the things that I'm looking up have quad A records that are giving out IPv6 addresses. I love seeing that and seeing that number increasing over time. And then being able to go back and look at like potentially malicious bogus domain names and things like that. So like that you might not even know are floating around there otherwise. I mean, there's like this, you know how John Edwards, before he was, you know, cheating on his wife and talking to prostitutes and all that, like he had this whole, there are two Americas thing.
Don't remember. No.
Yeah. John Edwards had this thing about how there's two Americas. There's the rich America and there's the poor America.
Okay.
And
yeah, yeah.
What there's something to be said for, there are two internets that people see. I think a lot of consumers that don't have, they don't understand like filtering capability or privacy stuff. They are in like a very low tier of internet service where they are just being harvested over and over and over again. And then there's like this other tier of user that's a little bit more savvy and uses things like NoScript and AdBlock and or sets up like a caching privacy enhancing proxy, or you know, uses services like OpenDNS to handle all of their resolution. You know, there are like these different experiences that you can have. I mean, anytime you've been to like a family member's house and they're like, oh gosh, you know, it takes forever. I go to Facebook and it takes like 5 minutes to load. And then while I'm waiting for it, like all these boxes are coming up.
Yeah. I left that out of my stuff, but I did, some cleanup on both of my grandparents', PCs while I'm in
town.
How'd that go? They had, no fewer than 4 new toolbars installed between the two computers, since I last saw them. So,
yeah. So don't tell me that there's like, you know, everyone's getting the same experience, cause they're not like your grandparents were, who knows what was going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an AOL toolbar, a Yahoo toolbar,
of course,
a Roadrunner toolbar. Yeah.
Oh yeah, sure. No, we had a guy on our campus who helped a friend set up their cable modem service in Illinois. So all of his browser windows were saying like, you know, Microsoft Internet Explorer brought to you by Comcast. I'm like,
yeah,
all over the place.
Anyway, yeah, so if you want to be smarter about this sort of stuff, you know, you're saying DNS Crypt and OpenDNS are out there for you.
Yeah. And I think, For the really privacy conscious people, there's definitely some value there. What I'm more interested in seeing though is I think people should take a look at the free services that OpenDNS provides for households, and I think that there's a lot of things people would find interesting there. And it's definitely a reliable service. I don't know about you, but like sometimes ISP DNS can be a little touch and go. And it's not a service that people spend a lot of resources on, except for people that specialize in it. So definitely check out OpenDNS.
Cool.
We probably do you think we'd have time to talk about this Apple Microsoft Connect thing?
Yeah.
Because you've been using the Connect.
We may go a bit long today. let's definitely talk about this because this is relevant given this Slate article that came out recently. So
yeah, that actually Liz sent me that. She was like, you might want to take a look at this article. And she was like all happy because, you know, she totally scooped me. She also knew about Steve Jobs dying before I did, which was
really
kind of freaking. Yeah.
I found out about that through Google, actually.
Yeah.
Google homepage. Yeah.
Yeah. She saw me and she's like, oh my God, are you okay? And I was like, about what? She's like, oh. And I couldn't tell if she was like excited that she knew before me. But yeah, like there's this, So there's all these like rumors going around that Apple's got something going on with a television.
Like an actual, you know, beyond Apple TV, actually manufacturing a full-on TV set.
A big screen, high definition monster TV that will have something cool about it. And you know, maybe they do, maybe they don't. I mean, clearly they're interested in television, and there's a lot of really good things that they could do for television.
But they just recently updated the Apple TV. I mean, that seems like a more moderate strategy for them. So,
well, they've always been very even keel about that. Like, I think their long-term strategy is that they want television to be an app. Much like, you know, making a phone call. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's no reason that television has to hold this crazy power that it does.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of really good programming that I think people like to watch, and I think people want to pay for, but they don't want to have to pay for a bunch of other crap that they're not interested in.
Right.
So there's a lot of interest in how to accomplish that while still letting the platform or the medium maintain its integrity. Such that it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So this the Microsoft Kinect stuff, and I mean, you have more experience about this than I do, but I mean, what do you think? I mean, it sounds like a really good offering. Like, people seem to really like it. People in my office, at least, all like it.
Yeah, no, it's good. It you know, depends on your habits. You know, depends on how you like to watch TV and explore content and all that. But they've come so far. I mean, when Xbox came out, when Xbox 360 came out, it had none of this. I mean, it was a game playing machine for the most part.
Well, it had like that Xbox Kinect thing, right? So if you had like a Windows Media Server in the house,
yeah. I mean,
you could talk to that.
Yeah. I mean, so they you know, there were feelers there, but basically, I mean, people didn't buy the Xbox initially for anything but to play games on it. And that has actually changed. I mean, you know, not necessarily that people are going out there and buying Xboxes just to have them as home theater devices. But more that people, and this is in this article actually, people are spending more time on non-game things on Xbox than they are on games, which
that's
represents
a
huge shift. Yeah. I mean, for this device that is, you know, was targeted directly at gaming to have it transition to this much more broad living room application.
That's what they all want, though. They've all...
Yep.
You know, Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, Sega, they've all always wanted to have like that center, front and center relationship.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and I think, and as this article points out, Microsoft has been successful in that. I mean, they've done a lot of cool things and people have liked those things. You know, things like voice search and I remember people being very excited when the Kinect first came out and you could watch TV shows and, you know, you don't touch a remote, you know, you just say Xbox pause and the, you know, whatever you're currently watching pauses. So, you know, stuff like that, stuff like a more stream. Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I meant to hide that.
You're not
that
in the studio?
Inside a pillow. Yeah, I know.
That happens.
Anyway, so they've streamlined a lot of the you know, more home theater, more content consumption, you know, non-video game content consumption aspects of the Xbox to the point where now, you know, with the integrated search, you know, you search for the example they gave was Batman, you know, you search for any sort of general thing that exists across multiple mediums and multiple services, and you get, you know, the Netflix movies, the Netflix TV shows about it. You get the, you know, the Xbox Zune service stuff. You get the Hulu stuff. You get the, you know, whatever you're pulling in content from all these different services and presenting it through a unified interface. You know, that's pretty powerful.
That's way cool.
Yeah. So
you think, I mean, I don't know what Sony's doing, but they've got some interesting traction there. I know they've got the Hulu and they have Netflix, but first of all, I'm not going to pay for Hulu because it's stupid because they still show you ads. Yes. And I hate that.
Yeah. Well, so the difference between Sony's approach and Microsoft's approach here, at least when contrasting PS3 and Xbox, on the PS3, it's a more fragmented experience. At least given the recent updates we've seen on Xbox. So on PS3, you've got each of those services is its own self-contained thing, and they're all there. But the thing that Xbox did recently with its new interface overhaul is it pulled all of that stuff into a unified search and display interface. And that includes Kinect support. So you can use your voice, you can use your hands, you can use your controller to navigate through all of that content in one place rather than going into all the separate apps to see that stuff. So I'm sure Sony will catch up. You know, I'm sure they're looking at the stuff the Xbox is doing and the amount of traction it's getting with that stuff, and they're probably looking to match that. But then the real question is, say Apple comes out with, you know, this TV that runs apps and does all this stuff, you know, just like, you know, they've been so successful in integrating multiple content sources and multiple services, on an iPad or an iPhone. So if they can do that really well on a TV as well, that's going to present some pretty serious challenge there to what Microsoft has kind of evolved over the years.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Yeah. We can always save it for next week, but I mean, the Sony's play will be the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, I mean, oh yeah,
I mean, that's how they got to join all this together.
So this works quite well. Yeah, along with this article, we've had some actually interesting rumors about the PlayStation 4, codenamed Orbis.
Have they actually called it a PlayStation 4?
No, although some people are saying Orbis sounds kind of like Forbis 4, but yeah, no, I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway, it's codenamed Orbis, and some details, some fairly reliable details have leaked, although really, you know, this is all rumor. None of this is confirmed. This is all kind of, you know,
through the
channels. But
the biggest, most important rumor that people should be alerted to is that they are looking to have restrictions on locking the content to a PlayStation account.
Right. Yeah.
So if you buy a game, that it will be locked to your account and you cannot resell it.
And I really like this. I know you don't, because I know you've been buying used games a lot, which of course, if a game is locked to your account, you can no longer turn around and sell that game to someone else.
Not without selling the entire account.
Right. Yeah. But I like this because what I see this as is basically a move to the PC model. You know, you buy a game on Steam, or you buy a PC game with a serial key, and it's, you know, and you register that serial key. You can't turn around and sell that serial key to someone because, you know, then they're not going to be able to play that game online, or they're not going to be able to guarantee to be able to play that game online because you've still got the serial key potentially registered on your computer.
Yeah.
So same thing here. And I like that because, you know, that means that I no longer have to maintain a big library of discs. You know, I can buy the disc if it's cheaper than the download game. I can put it in my PS3 or my PS4. I can register that game, and then I can toss the disc. I no longer have to swap discs in and out of that system. I can just play all my stuff on the system itself, install everything to the hard drive.
I really think that it's gonna hurt them. That, I mean, unless there's an extra benefit, it can't just be that. Yeah, you can download them now, and it's set to your account.
Yeah. Oh no! So I mean, the benefit should be that they're cheaper.
Yes.
Yes. And yes. If that's the case, then I am 100% on board.
And that's the App Store model from Apple, right?
And that's the Steam model too. I mean, you know, Steam games are cheap.
Well, yeah, they did it first,
especially if you get them on sale. Yeah.
And so, I mean, Lion, to bring it back to that, I mean, it was one of the cheapest operating systems that Apple's ever sold, and it was because it was exclusively available through the App Store.
Right.
I mean, they didn't have to. They don't have boxes. They don't have discs. They don't have, you know, truck drivers carting crap all over the country. You know, like, they're able to cut a lot of the cost by doing a digital distribution system. So maybe that would translate into a lower price point for stuff, thereby negating the need for that market.
Yeah. Yeah. One would hope. I mean, the problem now, like, if you look on the Xbox games on demand service, if you look on the PlayStation Network, even with the new Vita games coming out, if you look at that stuff, the digital downloads are at most $5 cheaper than the physical copies.
Yeah, it's dumb.
And if you look at Steam, I mean, you're looking at, you know, a 30% difference, if not more, between those prices. So it's got a long way to go. And I just, you know, I don't know if Sony's going to be able to push it that far within the time frame. You know, this thing is potentially looking at a 2013 release, and I just don't know if Sony's gonna be able to push all of the relevant publishers and you know, interested parties to in the direction of, yeah, we need to make these things cheap because there's no more used game sales.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the way they play it. I don't know that I would want to be on board with that, mainly just because I'm kind of sitting out the first-hand market
right.
for quite a while. But, you know, it's also possible that the workaround for this would be that when you buy a new game, you create a new PSN account for every title that you have.
Yeah, yeah, that is... that's, I mean, yes, theoretically, but, you know, I mean, no one's going to do that, and...
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, I would, but just because... I would like to be able to just, because otherwise you have to hand over control of your entire account. So if they're going to make you lock a game to one account, then I'm going to create a new account for every game.
That seems dramatic to me. I don't know. I mean, you know, Steam works really well. And there's
I'm usually not inclined to theatrics. So, you know.
Yeah. Clearly. you know, the Steam works really well. You know, part of that is because it works really well, you know, in the PC market.
Well, there's also a benefit to Steam in that they sell stuff for multiple platforms. So
yeah,
that's different.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've definitely got to figure some things out to make this work and to make people actually buy into.
Yeah, the way games are going though for iOS, like it's possible that I won't even care if there's like new consoles past the Wii U. Like I'm serious. Like I, you know, that they have Baldur's Gate coming out for the iPad.
That's gonna be good. Yeah,
it's gonna be awesome.
Yeah,
I mean. That's a good platform. And things like the Vita and things like, you know, whatever Nintendo has coming out. And I don't know. Do you think the consoles are really going to, I mean, there was another article I read last week about the Wii U and they're like, you know, will it matter that the Wii U is not going to have like any better graphics than what's available on a PS3 or a Xbox 360 now?
Right.
And the answer is, I don't know, maybe not. Like once you get to like that photorealistic thing, there's really no place to go from there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the 3D TV has tried and stumbled.
Yeah,
so,
and we've talked about this in the past, but basically, I mean, you know, there's a reason Sony is moving first here, and that's because Microsoft and the Xbox are perfectly happy where they are.
Yeah.
You know, the current graphics are satisfying everyone. The current system is working really well. It's got all these extra home media center features. The Kinect sold really, really well. So, you know, they're doing fine. Like, they don't really need to.
Yeah, they're not in a huge hurry.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why you're seeing Sony moving first here. And yeah, I think it is a question. Do people really need a PlayStation 4? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, does the market demand that yet?
Right.
Like, I mean, I guess on the other hand, too, we're talking 2013.
Yeah. 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 I mean, yeah, it could be a different landscape then. And especially if they turn what currently seems like a failure, you know, this whole idea of killing the used game market, if they turn this into something amazing, you know, something like Steam, but in a way that works really well on consoles, you know, maybe that wins. I don't know.
Hey, there's one thing that Sony has shown us, and that is that they always have the best interest of the customers at heart.
And they never always have that amazing trick up their sleeve. I mean, clearly they are at the front of the innovation threshold.
Nobody ships malware on CDs like Sony does.
All right. Well, and with that wonderful capstone to that discussion, I think we will end it a bit late on this show. Looking forward to more details on the next PlayStation 4/Orbis.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how that platform shapes up.
Yeah. All right. Well, that will do it for this episode of the Hell Yeah Show. If you want to email us, you can email us at show@hellyeah.com. You can visit our website at show.hellyeah.com.
Or on the Twitter machine, you may find us twitter.com/hellyeahshow. Send a tweet to @HellYeahShow.
Indeed. And with that, we will see you next week. Bye.